Greetings, fellow nature lovers. This is Nature's Edge with your humble host, Dale Stewart. Today we're going to talk about energy, and we're going to particularly talk about wind energy. You know, since the early recorded history, people have been harnessing the energy of the wind. Wind energy propelled boats along the Nile River as early as 5,000 B.C., and by 200 B.C., simple windmills in China were pumping water, while vertical shaft windmills with woven reed sails were grinding grain in Persia and the Middle East. New ways of using energy of the wind eventually spread around the world, and by the 11th century, people in the Middle East were using windmills extensively for food production. Returning merchants and crusaders carried this idea back to Europe. The Dutch refined the windmill and adapted it for draining lakes and marshes in the Rhine River Delta. When settlers took this technology to the New World in the late 19th century, they began using windmills to pump water for farms and ranches, and later to generate electricity for home and energy. Today's guest is kind of special to me. He's a longtime friend, someone who I've known for, gosh, almost 20 years or longer now, Mr. Jerry Barber. Jerry is an alumnus of Ohio State University, has an undergraduate degree in physics, chemistry, and comprehensive sciences. Jerry began his professional career in Ohio teaching physics, chemistry, and biology at the high school level, and had graduate studies at Bowling Green State University. Jerry left the academic world to start and operate the second largest amusement park ride manufacturing company in the United States for many years. And during this time, Jerry invented over 38 U.S. patents, 21 of which were produced commercially. His patents cover a variety of fields from military to child safety. His most widely known patent is the free fall amusement park ride, which if you've been to most of the amusement parks in the United States and to the carnivals worldwide, you've probably experienced this ride. I've experienced it. I have never ridden it, but it is something to behold. So Jerry is quite exceptional in that. And a few years ago, Jerry started looking into to wind turbine design. Based on his background in physics and engineering and working with amusement park rides for a long time, he developed and has developed quite a new concept in wind power, and we're going to get Jerry to explain that to us here shortly. And he has over some 50 patents, I think, now, including patents pending on the wind turbine. I could go on and on and on about Jerry. As I said, I've known him a long time, and Jerry, it is a privilege to have you in studio today.
Well, thank you, Dale. It's a privilege to be here.
As I said, we're going to talk about a lot of things, but mainly we're going to concentrate on wind turbine technology, which is your latest venture, and I think potentially has the ability to really shape the world and the world of energy with some of the new things that you're doing there. Could you just give us a brief summary of your new technology and what you're doing?
Well, Dale, all I've really done is take technology that has been developed over the last more than 100 years in the amusement park and the traveling carnival industries to operate big amusement rides. And I've taken that technology and transferred it to the big wind turbine industry. And this first came about when I saw a gearbox being delivered to GE for one wind turbine. And the gearbox is almost as big as an SUV and cost over $250,000. And it turns out about 80% of all the maintenance on all the big wind turbines is related to the gearbox. Yeah. Not only that, the gearbox produces a lot of what's called parasitic heat, lost energy, because every gearbox has got a radiator bigger than a semi-truck, big pump pumping oil out of the gearbox through the radiator, fan blowing, and that heat is all lost. Plus, the gearbox is one of the big noise makers.
Yeah.
Well, around the world, there's a lot of really big Ferris wheels. In fact, I was at a trade show recently in Vegas, and they had the largest Ferris wheel in the world. I think it's 565 feet in diameter. It's all rim-driven, meaning there are rubber tires running on the rim that turns it. And each one of those many, many gondolas carries a lot of people, so it's turning a lot of weight. So I've kind of turned, or think of it as I've made a wind turbine that's almost like a Ferris wheel with no seats. And the fact that it's rim-driven, I have, and I've worked with Michelin. They've been very, very helpful. And we picked out four special tires that run on the rim, and these drive one. The one we're building right now is an 800 kW. That's 800,000 watt generator. We're building it actually. I have another amusement. I sold my amusement ride company a few years back, but one of my competitions was also with a good friend. Had some amusement ride company out in northeast Colorado. So since they built big Ferris wheels, they had the ability to do all the steel work, all the fiberglass work. I contract with them to build the prototype. And that prototype is 80% complete, all the engineering complete. So within less than 2 months, we should be producing electricity. But people don't realize how big an 800 kW wind turbine is.
No, they don't.
We had a problem that the town that this factory in is Marino, Colorado. And so we thought, well, we'll use the electricity to run the plant and we'll sell the rest of it back to the grid. And we found out the power company says, no, you can't do that. We says, why not? It's the law out there. You know, you can have to buy the electricity. Says, the problem is you make four times more electricity than our little substation will handle. And for only $270,000, they will upgrade the substation and buy all of our electricity.
Yeah.
So we're going to run the electricity into load bank for a while.
Well, that's amazing, but especially the noise. The two areas with the experience that I've had with wind turbines has been in extreme environments, and one of those environments was the Antarctic, and the area that we had the most problem with was the gearboxes and things freezing and breaking within those gearboxes. That seemed to be the engineering shortfall. And the other one, these things are noisy. I mean, people if you're around them, and it sounds like that you've eliminated both of those challenges.
For the noise, you're absolutely right. That has been a major factor. And let me explain what we have done to reduce the noise. One, we use five blades instead of three. Everybody would probably use more blades. It seems that odd numbers of blades operate more smoothly. But everybody would use probably five blades. Except blades on the big current wind turbines are very expensive.
Yeah.
And by us supporting our blade at the rim and at the axle, we get by with a very thin blade. Think a glider airplane wing. And this has the advantage of being more efficient, picks up more energy out of the wind. It has much less turbulence, which means less noise. And when you run five blades, you run three-fifths as fast as you do with three blades for the same diameter wind turbine. So noise is directly proportional to tip speed plus turbulence. And we have really cut both of those back.
We are talking with Mr. Jerry Barber about wind turbines and the new technology that he has developed, and we shall return shortly. Welcome back, and you are listening to Nature's Edge. I'm Dale Stewart, and my in-studio guest today is a good friend and knowledgeable guy when it comes to talking about wind turbines. And Jerry was just giving us background on the new wind turbine that he is responsible for designing. And Jerry, I got to ask you, because a lot of people just don't know, what is a wind turbine and how does it work?
Okay. A wind turbine is simply a mechanical device to get energy out of the wind and transform it into some other usable form. And what it does is simply slows up the air, and that's where the energy comes from. And all the modern wind turbines change that energy into electricity by turning a generator. Now, it so happens that the wind, after it goes through the wind turbine, is moving a little slower, and it kind of makes a log jam. And because of that, the theoretical limit of the amount of energy you can get out of the wind, this was calculated back in the 1930s, is 59%. Because if you could get more energy out of the wind, the log jam, the backup of the wind, causes the wind to go around the outside of the blades. So
so it creates like a cushion of air?
Exactly.
And then the air spins.
Right. Yeah. It builds up a little air pressure in front, and the air goes around. But all the wind turbine really does is change moving molecules of air, slows them up, and captures that energy and puts it into electricity in the case of most wind turbines. The whole wind turbine industry, most wind turbines get anywhere from 30 to 50% of the energy that is available in the wind.
In the wind. And I know there are classifications. Could you talk a little bit about that, Jerry, classifications of wind turbines?
Yeah, there's basically three sizes, and they're almost three totally different manufacturing capabilities, three different markets. There's under 100 kW, that's under 100,000 watts. And these are the small ones, like you would have one at your home, one on the back of your sailboat to charge the batteries and so forth. And there are a lot of little manufacturers. That's almost an overcrowded market because China has just produced a tremendous number of these. And a lot of them are very, very well built, and a lot of them are built by companies that have done very little engineering. So that's a mishmash. We don't want to get into that market. And then there's the market that's over 1 megawatt. And this is the world of, you know, like Duke Power or the big power companies, the big wind farms. And, for example, GE and Vestas are probably the two biggest companies that make these wind turbines. And I think last I heard, I think GE had 1,800, 1.5 megawatt. That's 1.5 million watts. These are really, really big. Now, the reason you almost never see one alone is because of the gearbox. It makes no economic sense to have one of these big wind turbines because about every 5 years, this gearbox has to come down and a rebuilt one put into place. That takes a huge crane, which is very expensive, a trained crew to do it. So they typically have 50 or 100 in a wind field, and they have a full-time crew and spare gearboxes and a full-time crane and can change them out. And that's the only way you make it efficient.
I was just going to ask you, and the system that you've designed fits into that large category
classification, or not? Ours could. No, it so happens that between 100 kW and 1 megawatt is almost totally empty field.
Hmm.
And the reason is the wind turbines in that size have to have a gearbox. And so if a factory, for example, needs an 800 kW wind turbine, they can't because they lose money when they pay to replace the gearboxes. So we see a wide open field for our 800 because we have no gearbox.
Yeah.
And any place they burn diesel fuel is a perfect place for us, because typically if you burn diesel fuel, you're paying 35 to 65 cents a kilowatt hour. And all the calculations on our wind turbine shows we're going to be roughly 5 cents a kilowatt hour to produce electricity.
Yeah, that was one of the questions was sort of, you know, how much electricity can it produce at a cost? Because I know one of the things that a lot of people seem to talk about is, well, we've got whether they're talking about any of the alternative power systems, whether they're talking about solar or wind they're always saying, well, those are there, but they're still more expensive than the other. But it sounds like maybe you're solving that problem.
Well, I think the whole key is, how much does it really cost you to produce a watt of electricity?
Yeah.
And that's what everything is designed to. And I think we can get this down dramatically from what is currently being done in the wind business.
Well, I know a lot of countries are even ahead of the United States when it comes to being world leaders in capacity. I know not too many months ago I was in Germany, and I know Germany has really stepped up their production and use of wind turbines. And I guess the United States would be not too far behind them. And then India, I know, is doing a lot with wind, and so is Spain looking at it. You know, the United Kingdom, not so much, but they're getting in there. I know China is looking at it and starting to do some things as well they should. If you've been to China there recently, but have you got any of the other countries or other big users starting to take a look at what you're doing, Jerry?
Oh yes, serious, a lot of very serious one. In fact, University of South Carolina did a worldwide study on our market and has come up with a tremendous amount. In fact, I am invited down in August to meet with the key energy people in Mexico City, and they said they also would like to introduce me to the president, which really surprised me.
Yeah.
But there's a lot of reasons that these countries, and there are varied reasons why they're wanting to go to wind. Obviously, they got to have wind in their area. Okay, Southeast United States, very little wind. You don't see wind turbines down here. But a lot of the world has wind. But it has a big effect on their cash flow. I mean, a lot of these countries have to buy their oil. And any time you replace oil, you're keeping money within the country. But even... And this has gotten more important recently. One of the reasons, say, Germany is really pushing things like wind energy is they feel like they are being held hostage to their natural gas supply coming from Russia.
Russia, yeah.
And so lots of political reasons to become self-independent on energy.
Is there and I guess it depends on the classification, but and I think you touched on this just briefly, but how much electricity can say one wind turbine really generate, Jerry?
Well, obviously this has to do with the speed of the wind.
Yeah.
And people do not understand this. It's a hard concept to get your head around. But the energy in the wind that is available is the cube, not the square, the cube of the speed of the wind. And what this means is if the wind is blowing 5 to 10 miles an hour, I don't care what kind of wind turbines you got, you're just not going to get a lot of electricity. Ours, for example, will produce 800 kW at about a 22-mile-an-hour wind. So it all depends on where you put these, how much energy you're going to get.
And that's why it's so critical to really be in an area that... has a fairly consistent wind or wind that's fairly consistent at a certain speed. You are listening to Nature's Edge with Dale Stewart and my in-studio guest today, Mr. Jerry Barber. And we will be back and talk more about wind turbines after this message. This is Nature's Edge, and I'm Dale Stewart. And my in-studio guest today, Mr. Jerry Barber, and we are talking about wind turbines and wind energy and wind capacity and all things dealing with wind power. Jerry, we've talked about classifications. We've talked about what is a wind turbine and all of that. And I know your design. Why does your system produce electricity at a lower cost than what's out there already?
Well, Dale, the electricity that a wind turbine makes is just electricity. So what everybody really, the bottom line of the bottom lines is, how much do I have to pay for the electricity that is produced? And so we really started from ground zero. How can we build a wind turbine that has the least amount of total cost over a 25-year period? And so we start out, everything, the manufacturing of our wind turbines can be done in a typical metal fab shop in almost every city in the country. The blades can be made in a typical fiberglass shop, maybe that's making boats. So these can be made without the super sophisticated machinery. We keep going back to keep it simple. Well, the first thing we did, we make sure that everything that goes on our design fits inside of a 40-foot container. Our 800 kW wind turbine will ship in 6 40-foot containers. This saves a lot on the transportation getting it there. Then, by putting a rim, we were able to support the blades at both ends, and our blades are less than 1/5 the weight of the typical wind turbines at size. So we save a huge amount of fiberglass in the manufacture of our blades. That not only cuts way down on the cost of the blades, it also makes them more aerodynamically efficient, much more like an airplane or a glider airplane wing. So that was a huge saving. Then going back to the fact that I was selling anywhere between 50 and 75 amusement rides to traveling carnivals every year for a few years, we got really good at making things portable.
Yeah.
Now, one of the big expenses of these wind turbines is the crane to set them up. They are extremely expensive. In fact, I just had a guy get a quote for a crane to set up a big wind turbine in one of the Caribbean islands, and just the crane rental was $400,000 because they had to bring it in on a barge.
Yeah.
So we set up our wind turbine without a crane, and everybody says, that's impossible. I said, have you ever gone to a state fair and see all those great big rides? You will not find one crane. So we're basically using technology that's been developed over 100 years by traveling carnivals and setting up and taking down equipment. That saves a lot of expense. The other thing we've done, most of them use the candlestick tower. Well, if you go to the state fair, all those big rides, they're spread the load out on the ground and set them on wooden blocks to
That's
level
true.
Them.
Yeah.
And the amount of concrete in these big wind turbines is the amount of concrete that would fill several backyard swimming pools. And it's hugely expensive. So we still have a concrete pad that's 40 by 40 feet, but it is probably 20% of the amount of concrete that is currently being used out there. Again, that's a savings. But the big savings, we don't have to buy that big gearbox. We don't lose the energy from the big gearbox. We don't make the noise of the big gearbox. And this allows these wind turbines to go places that they can't go, anywhere else. Now, ours still has the variable, the blades all turn into the wind. It's a power driven, it's called a yaw drive. Mm-hmm. We have the variable pitch blades, so we can keep the blades always at the ideal angle attack to the wind. So we got all the advantages of the big turbines, but none of the disadvantages. All this ends up having much, much less maintenance, much longer life of the wind turbine. and just a far, far, far lower cost.
So you, I mean, the design process itself, I mean, going in and knowing you, Jerry, I mean, you started designing from day one with this in mind, reducing how can I reduce not only the cost but improve efficiency and have something. How about the life cycle of your unit compared to what's out there now?
Well, basically, this all the engineering. In fact, the engineering was done by the largest company that engineers amusement rides, and amusement rides. There literally are some amusement rides that were made, are still operating, before World War I.
Yeah, yeah.
So when we build amusement rides, we don't put a life on them of 20. All the current wind turbines out there, they say their life is 20 years. We say 25, and then it needs reconditioned. But there's no reason they shouldn't sit there and operate for 50 years.
Let me ask you this, because I know this is something that's being looked at quite a bit, and we've got about 3 minutes in this segment. What about offshore, Jerry? What about putting these things offshore?
Well, this is very interesting. There are no wind turbines offshore on the west coast of the United States.
That's
because
correct.
The water gets too deep too fast.
That's correct.
And there's the problem they've had with having on the east coast, where it's shallow, it's close to shore, and people that own big homes don't want to look at wind turbines. And so this is why right now there are no offshore wind turbines in the U.S. There are a lot of them in Europe and in China. What I have come up with, and I have several patents on this, is basically I have figured out how to make a barge-mounted wind turbine. I actually put two wind turbines side-by-side on the barge. And the reason for this, one actually turns clockwise, one turns counterclockwise, because when a big wheel is spinning, it has a gyroscopic turning effect. And I actually have an anchoring system. You all know that a boat will blow downwind.
Yes.
Well, mine has one anchor line. So rather than connect to the seafloor with great big towers, which is super expensive, I have a floating wind turbine. Now, I could go in extremely deep water with this anchoring system. And the blades will always stay facing the wind. But the beauty of this, again, back to the carnival ride technology, if a hurricane's coming, a crew of just a couple men in about 4 hours will have the wind turbines, they lay down hydraulically onto the barge, and they tow away. Now, they don't necessarily go to shore. They go at a right angle to the projected path of the hurricane. But if it needs major overhaul or whatever, they take the barge. It could be anchored or an island where there's really no facilities. But they can always tow it to some place where there's a city that has facilities, and it can be done. And also, all the manufacturing is done on shore, put on the barge, and towed out. So this eliminates all the special ships to set them up. So this is, I think, going to become extremely popular in places like the Caribbean islands. But it has the advantage on the East Coast, you can go far enough offshore. Once you get out about 12, 15 miles, just the curvature of Earth makes wind turbines disappear.
Right.
So, but it's too deep out there for current technology. So we can go outside, but plus the wind out there is much better.
It is. Yeah.
And as far as running the cables for electricity underground, that's well-developed technology. Between islands all over the world, there are underwater cables that can be laid, and it's expensive, but not
ridiculous.
Yeah,
it's not out of, and by using the two turbines, I mean, what comes to my mind is sort of the helicopter effect and how a helicopter works.
Correct.
That keeps it stable. Where if you just add one, not so much. You've got a lot of trouble going on there. We're speaking to Jerry Barber, and we're talking about wind turbines and wind energy, and where Jerry believes it's going with his designs. This is Dale Stewart, and you're listening to Nature's Edge. Welcome back. This is Nature's Edge with Dale Stewart and my in-studio guest, Mr. Jerry Barber. And Jerry and I have been talking about all things wind and dealing with wind energy and wind turbines. And Jerry has developed a quite remarkable system, and we're talking about that. And Jerry, where's the market? Where do you see the market?
Because our wind turbine, you can have just one. You don't have to have a whole big wind field, and all because it's economical without the gearbox. We think the first place, the easy picking, will be any place they produce electricity with diesel power. For example, in the Caribbean, almost all electricity is diesel.
Yes.
And the price of electricity down there runs from 35 to 65 cents a kilowatt hour. And here you're probably paying 10, 12 cents a kilowatt hour. That varies around different states. And we can produce it in the range of 5 cents a kilowatt hour. But there's also a lot of places in northern Canada, the Aleutian Islands, a lot of places all over the world still using diesel. And, of course, that produces a lot of carbon dioxide.
It does. The so you're thinking that probably the initial market is the not necessarily the developing nations, but more like the Caribbean.
Well,
or the
no, there's a huge market in developing nations because there are a lot of factories that are setting out by themselves, and they are producing, or they're using a lot of electricity. And the reason they don't have a wind turbine right now, you can't set up one at their factory. They don't need the electricity from 50 wind turbines, but they definitely can use all the electricity from one wind turbine or two wind turbines. And so we see a huge amount of use like this.
That yeah, that makes sense. I see that now. I guess I was thinking more like you know, replacing the big coal-fired systems that we have in this country and things like that.
Well, you won't see many in southeast United States because this is a very poor, there's not much wind.
Yeah.
But you, there's another reason a lot of these factories want wind turbines, and that is for the public relations.
Yeah.
Just the fact their employees feel better that they're contributing to the environment. Their customers feel better.
Yeah, that's a that is a big point. I've got to ask you, Catherine, my wife, who you know, she said, Dale, you've got to ask Jerry how many birds he's going to kill with these things. Yeah, she's a bird lover, so we got to talk the three things. Yeah,
wind turbines do kill birds. They do kill bats. However, it is I think overplayed. I just read that the average wind turbine kills 4 birds a year. I think I kill that many with my house with birds running into the glass in the windows.
Yeah, the back of Jerry's house is glass. So
that is a factor. Now, what we have done on our wind turbine, by going to 5 blades, it slows it up. Mm-hmm. So it's moving 3/5 as fast, and the birds then can do a better job of predicting where the blades are. But also by having the rim around the outside, it gives them a reference point.
It does, yeah.
So they can see what they're getting into much easier.
What about the visual impact? I know one of the downfalls is people want the energy, they want to go green, they want the wind power, but they say, I don't want these big things sitting in my backyard.
Let's just take the most common wind turbine out there. That blade is, I don't know, 12 feet wide?
At least, yeah.
At least that.
Yeah.
They're very, very big. And so that means you can see them a long ways away. And we call it the candlestick tower, is maybe 12 feet in diameter. And you can see that a long ways away. Well, our blades are 3 feet wide at the tip and 6 feet wide, just under 6 feet wide at the axle. So they disappear very quickly. And instead of using the candlestick tower, we use the lattice tower, which is more like a power line, high voltage power line structure. And these disappear quickly. So you won't see ours nearly as far away as you will current technology.
Yeah, and then, of course, the other thing that people talk about, which we've already discussed, and that was the noise and the sound, and which, as you discussed, primarily comes from that huge gearbox.
Well, it's the gearbox and also the turbulence in the blade.
And from the blades.
And we use a glider airplane wing, basically, for our blade. And a glider, as you know, all the pilots always talk about how quiet and peaceful it is when you're up there gliding.
It is. Now does your blade, does it torque, Jerry? Does it?
Yes. Yeah. Yes, it's called a variable pitch blade.
Yes.
Because what you want to do as the wind speed changes, the direction the wind coming in on the blade changes slightly, and you want to keep an airfoil, whether it's an airfoil on a wind turbine or an airplane, to get maximum lift, you have to have the blade running at about a 12-degree angle to the incoming wind. So we change it, and we measure the direction of the wind, the speed of the wind, and the computer automatically changes the blades to the ideal angle of attack.
Yeah, I know there's a lot more to this, Jerry, and we could spend many hours talking about wind turbines and wind energy. It has been a privilege having you with me today, and I'd like to have you back as we get these things out there. I'm going to talk to you a little bit today about my notes from the field. Those of you who follow me on Facebook know that I just returned from Mexico City and meetings concerning wildlife and ecosystem construction and management. The wildlife conservation agencies of the United States, of Mexico, and Canada a number of years ago signed a memorandum of understanding establishing the Canadian, Mexico, and U.S. Trilateral Committee for Wildlife and Ecosystem Conservation and Management. And I was invited down to one of their meetings to talk about these very important conservation issues that are facing primarily Mexico and Latin America. And Mexico makes up only about 1% of the Earth's land area, but it's home to an amazing 1/10 of all the species known to science today. It is also a major center for plant origins and domestication. I can tell you its rainforests are among the richest reservoirs of biological material on this planet, and it has a very diverse habitat, which is home to a broad array of wildlife, including many seasonal residents that migrate to and from the U.S. and other areas. Probably one of the common things that people are aware of is the hummingbird, which migrates from Central America and from Mexico. The U.S. and Mexico share 450 different species that are listed under the Convention of International Trade of Endangered Species. And these species depend on Mexico for their survival, and some of them are the sea turtle, the gray whale, bats, condor, my favorite, the jaguar, the manatee, pronghorn, desert sheep, insects such as the monarch butterfly, and a large variety of migratory birds like the hummingbird that we just talked about. And this astounding biodiversity faces increasing threats such as illegal timber harvesting or deforestation, unsustainable land use practices, and illegal wildlife trade. Those are all things that that I had the opportunity to speak on and listen to, and had the opportunity to visit with many of the forest wardens from many of the reserves throughout Mexico and Central America. I got a real feel for what they're doing. We were able to discuss challenges that they're facing, again, such as illegal logging, illegal wildlife trade. We discussed forest fires, and we discussed human settlements and the impact that humans are making on our wildlife efforts. And I was also fortunate enough to visit and get a behind-the-scenes tour of the big zoo in Mexico, which is quite a place. It is the home of giant pandas, and that zoo has become one of the first institutions outside of China where captive breeding of this species has been successful. I thoroughly enjoyed my visit to Mexico City, and we'll talk more about it later. You've been listening to Nature's Edge with Dale Stewart, and I will see you in the wild.